It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Belgian prosecutors say police in Brussels arrested 16 suspects in terror raids on Sunday, but say top Paris massacre suspect Salah Abdeslam was not among those detained. Abdeslam is thought to have crossed into Belgium on November 14th, just hours after Islamic State gunmen killed 130 people and wounded hundreds of others in coordinated attacks in Paris, for which the Islamic State claimed responsibility. Meantime, Brussels' subway system and its schools remain closed today, with the city under the highest threat alert. Monash University EU analyst Ben Wellings spoke with VOA about the alert.
It is the highest level of emergency the Belgian state has instigated since 1945. And of course, it's very much in light of the events in Paris the week before last. So we haven't seen anything quite like this in Belgium for many, many decades.
In other developments on Saturday, Russia said its security forces killed 11 Islamic State militants, destroyed an arms cache in the North Caucasus region, and in Turkey, authorities announced the arrest of a Belgian citizen and two Syrians suspected of aiding and abetting IS terrorists. The Dogan News Agency says the Belgian citizen is accused of carrying out reconnaissance for the Paris plot. Malian authorities searched Sunday for at least three suspects they believe are connected to Friday's deadly jihadist attack on the Radisson Blue Hotel in the capital Bamako that killed 19. Investigators are said to be following several leads in the case and have recovered evidence from the hotel. This is VOA News. At least eight Al-Shabaab militants were killed in a suspected drone strike on Sunday on a base near the Baladul Amin village, which is 120 kilometers northwest of Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. Sources tell VOA that at least three junior Al-Shabaab commanders are among the dead. A top Al-Shabaab official believed to be the leader of a pro-Islamic State faction was shot dead in an ambush in southern Somalia. Sources told VOA Sunday that Sheikh Hussein Abdigedi and four others were ambushed by Al-Shabaab fighters in the middle Juba region. Iran said Sunday it sentenced Washington Post journalist Jason Rezaian to an unspecified prison term. Rezaian was convicted last month on espionage charges. A spokesman for Iran's judiciary announced the sentence on Iran State Television's website, but said it was not finalized. Washington Post foreign editor Douglas Gell says the newspaper was aware of the Iranian announcement.
I think there's no doubt that Jason has been a victim of this collision in Iran between tectonic forces, including people who are still very much opposed to the nuclear deal with the United States, and I think are doing all they can to block it.
Washington Post foreign editor Douglas Gell. An Israeli woman was stabbed to death by a Palestinian in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. The Palestinian attacked the 21-year-old woman before he was shot and killed by soldiers nearby. Earlier, a woman pulled out a knife at a military base entrance and began approaching civilians. Leaders of the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, signed a declaration establishing a formal economic, political, security, and socio-cultural community. VOA Steve Herman reports from Kuala Lumpur.
Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak hailed the establishment of the ASEAN community as a landmark achievement, being realized more than a dozen years after it was first proposed.
Our ASEAN way has guided us and will continue to be our compass as we seek to realize a politically cohesive, economically integrated, socially responsible, and a truly people-oriented, people-centered, and rules-based ASEAN.
Many tariff barriers have already been eliminated among ASEAN states, although many politically sensitive sectors remain protected. Steve Herman, Kuala Lumpur.
Opposition leader Mauricio Macri has won Argentina's first-ever presidential runoff election. The election comes at a time when Argentina's economy, Latin America's third-largest, has stalled. You can get more news by going to our website. You can find us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, November 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Mali begins 3 days of mourning today, Monday, as survivors tell harrowing stories about Friday's hotel attack.
We got the doors open. We noticed shooting starting from across the street, 4 to 5 individuals running towards us and shooting. We immediately ran back inside the embassy.
TerraCamp is an American building company employee in Bamako. An international panel of experts is critical of the response to the West Africa Ebola outbreak. South Sudan political parties agreed to support the peace agreement signed last August. And Nigeria's military vows again to destroy Boko Haram, even as the terrorist group launched another deadly attack on Sunday.
There is a new collective zeal and determination on the part of the citizenry to ensure that Boko Haram is defeated, is degraded, that it will no longer have the capacity to cause mayhem and wanton destruction of life and property.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is Nigeria's military spokesman. Zimbabwe's first lady denies she is trying to usurp the power of the vice president. And Belgium remains on the highest terror alert. The Stories Plus Mark Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Mali begins 3 days of mourning today, Monday, as investigators Sunday intensified their hunt for suspects in Friday's luxury hotel attack in the capital Bamako that left more than 19 people dead. Meanwhile, and as Katerina Hoyer reports from Bamako, survivors of the attack are telling their harrowing stories.
At 7 a.m. on Friday, the hotel guests at the Radisson Blu were still asleep. In the first floor breakfast dining room, the staff was busy setting the tables. Terry Kemp, an American building company employee, was waiting for a car to pick him up and take him to the U.S. Embassy, only a few blocks from the hotel. He and his colleague, John Hernandez, were just getting in the car when they heard gunshots coming from the other end of the parking lot.
We got the doors open. We noticed shooting starting from across the street, 4 to 5 individuals running towards us and shooting. We immediately ran back inside the embassy. As we were going up the steps, the glass was shattered. I went in, I fell down. John kept going. I got back up. The terrorists were behind me.
Kemp and Hernandez were both rescued. Kemp, after about an hour, by U.S. Embassy security forces. Hernandez climbed the staircase to the roof where the U.N. Quick Response Force found him hours later. But more than 20 others were not so lucky. Among the dead were Chinese businessmen with the China Railroad Company and Russians working for a freight company serving French forces and the UN mission in Mali. A Belgian parliamentarian and an American development consultant, Anita Datar, also lost their lives in the attack, which kept over 100 guests and staff trapped inside a hotel for hours. Al-Murabitun, a breakaway Al-Qaeda faction from the country's north, claimed responsibility for the siege that ended after special forces stormed a luxury facility considered the safest hotel in Bamako. Over the weekend, hotels all over the capital ramped up security. On Sunday, Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita had to step over broken glass and bloodstains still left on the floor when he visited the Radisson Blu, along with Senegalese leader Macky Sall, high-ranking generals and the hotel management and staff. The president called the attack a global threat and called on all Malians to unite in the fight against the terrorists.
À ceux qui le concernent, ou qui se trouvent, est porteur de notre sauvegarde à tous. Et ça, il faut qu'on le comprenne. Il faut qu'on le comprenne. Ce que nous devons faire, nous, au niveau des États, nous le ferons. Et nous le ferons de plus en plus, de mieux en mieux.
Today we see a changed world, a place where terrorists can attack anytime, anywhere. All Malians need to join forces against this threat. Over the weekend, Keita announced a state of emergency and 3 days of mourning. Katrina Hoye for VOA News in Bamako.
Nigeria's military is again vowing to destroy Boko Haram by the end of the year, even as the terrorist group Sunday launched another deadly attack in the northeast of the country, killing around 8 people. Reports say a suicide bomber, probably a 20-year-old woman, detonated her explosives among internally displaced people, mostly women and children, as they arrived in the city of Maiduguri. Military spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman clarified that the attack did not take place in Maiduguri, but on the outskirts of the city, he said. The Nigerian army, assisted by the citizens, is working around the clock to ensure that Boko Haram is degraded and defeated before the end of this year.
There was a lone female suicide bomber that was intercepted by our troops, and of course, other security agencies at Mapa checkpoint, which is at the outskirts of Maiduguri, Borno State. So it is not correct for anybody to say it was in Maiduguri. And when she was spotted, she quickly detonated the bomb, which exploded and killed 8 people, injuring about 8 others, most of whom were women pedestrians. And preliminary investigations have revealed that actually the female suicide bomber wanted to commit more havoc by joining, you know, other internally displaced persons going about their businesses so that she could kill more people, possibly with the intent of even going to the city.
Maiduguri has been kind of a center for Boko Haram. They have been carrying out bombings and attacks in that area. What is the security situation in Maiduguri? Do you have enough security?
Well, like I told you, there is no absolute terms when you are fighting terrorism and insurgency. But I would say Maiduguri is cool and calm, and we hope it will remain that way. And adequate security measures have always been put in place to secure the lives and properties of the inhabitants of that city, and we'll continue to do that.
Boko Haram has pledged allegiance to ISIS, and with the event in Mali, is your government kind of concerned now that Boko Haram might be planning something more dramatic than what it has been doing?
Well, I don't speak for the government, but I speak for the Nigerian army. However, I would like to tell you that every reasonable human being is concerned about the wanton destructions of life and properties by terrorists, regardless of wherever they are, especially given our experience here in Nigeria. For them to have pay allegiance to another criminal terrorist group is another way of boosting their image, because we are quite aware of the fact that Boko Haram terrorists are gradually being defeated and degraded to the extent that they no longer have the freedom of action or movement as they used to have before. And we'll continue in that regard.
December is just around the corner, and your president has given the military until the end of December. Do you think the military can meet that deadline?
Well, I can tell you the military is working around the clock, and it is not just the military, all the security agencies. And in fact, the good thing about overwhelming majority of Nigerians, they have been cooperating and assisting to ensure we meet up the deadline. But the most important thing I want you to understand is to ensure the security of lives and properties of Nigerians. You understand? Because these terrorists have been raising havoc since time immemorial in this country, and we are so determined. There is a new collective zeal and determination on the part of the citizenry, and of course, securities have always been in the vanguard of it, to ensure that Boko Haram is defeated, is degraded, that it will no longer have the capacity to cause mayhem and wanton destruction of life and property by the end of the year.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is Nigeria's military spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. An international panel of experts is sharply critical of the response to the Ebola outbreak in West Africa that began 2 years ago. The experts are recommending changes to improve the national and international response to the next disease outbreak. Health reporter Ark Chimes has the details.
The expert panel concluded that neither Guinea nor Liberia nor Sierra Leone had the resources to prevent or contain the Ebola epidemic, and that the international response was inadequate. For example, study director Suri Moon of Harvard University says scientists and health workers did not have the latest information on how the epidemic was spreading, among other problems.
There were deep inadequacies in the arrangements for sharing information. For example, on how fast the virus was spreading in real time, there were deep inadequacies in the investments for drugs, vaccines, rapid diagnostic tests before Ebola became the big emergency that it did last year.
The experts' recommendations include increased resources to identify and treat patients, incentives to promote early reporting of outbreaks, and standards and procedures for sharing information about the extent of an epidemic and the best ways of treating the disease. One third of the recommendations focused on improvements in the international public health system. For example, getting the UN Security Council involved in health issues and a narrower, more focused mission for the World Health Organization. Moon says the WHO, which has a unique role in global public health, is too often subject to government interference by countries where outbreaks occur. The epidemic in West Africa has lessons for the response to the next disease outbreak.
Ebola should absolutely change the game. The catastrophe that it was and the extent of human suffering and the worldwide panic that we saw during Ebola was of such a magnitude that I don't think political leaders have any excuse not to drive through some of these very important reforms. Because if not now, then when?
Suri Moon is the first author of a paper recommending changes in the response to disease outbreaks. The independent review is published in the British medical journal, The Lancet. For VOA News, this is Art Chimes reporting.
Today's Monday, the 23rd day of November, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. South Sudan political parties have agreed to support the peace deal signed last August between the government and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. The decision followed consultation last Friday in Juba with IGA chief mediator and former Ethiopian foreign minister Seyou Mesfin. Wake Simon Wudu of VOA South Sudan in Focus program has details from Juba.
The agreement came following 3 days of consultations with Mesfin in the capital Juba. Though IGAD had wanted only one person to sign on behalf of all the political parties, no agreement was reached on who that person would be.
If the parties all together are not able to agree on who should sign on behalf of them into this agreement, then we propose to them there is a provision in the agreement that the parties can not only sign, but adhere to the agreement in their individual capacity. So what we propose to them is that we will allow every party legally registered in the country to sign the agreement in their individual capacity. This was acceptable to all the parties.
Mesfin says the signatures of the political parties is important because the agreement was reached after inclusive negotiations that brought together all of South Sudanese stakeholders. He says having the signatures of the leaders of other political parties will demonstrate their commitment to the implementation of the agreement. SPLMDC leader Lam Akol Ajawin, who heads the National Alliance, an umbrella group of 18 opposition political parties, was initially expedited to sign on behalf of other political parties.
In absence of a way out and in absence of the government not taking away the obstacles against our signing, we think that this is an option that we can live with. In fact, if each and every citizen of South Sudan can sign, why not?
Mesfin told the reporters his meetings in Juba were also aimed at boosting arrangements for hosting the IGAD Heads of State Summit, which is scheduled to take place next week. Mesfin says that both IGAD and the South Sudan government are working together to prepare for the summit.
South Sudanese actors will participate in this process here in Juba, which would enable them to pledge to their people in the presence of IGAD leaders and the partners that they show remorse that what happened to their country for the last 2 years has been a very devastating one, and they don't want to look into the back. They want to pledge that they are leaving this behind them. They will declare that they have concluded this chapter of violence, and they will also pledge that they will scrupulously implement the agreement in letter and spirit.
Mesfin says the summit will also be a time for the international community to pledge funds to support the implementation of the peace deal. Mesfin confirmed anti-opposition leader Riek Machar is expected to attend the summit. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudo in Juba.
Zimbabwe First Lady Grace Mugabe has denied allegations she is trying to usurp the powers of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Mrs. Mugabe is currently going around the country as part of her Meet the People tour. Chris Gandhi of VOA Zimbabwe program reports.
This follows reports that some ZANU-PF provinces led by Mashonaland West are pushing for the elevation of Mrs. Mugabe, the current Women's League boss, to the position of vice president. Mrs. Mugabe told party supporters she actually prefers to be led by Mnangagwa, adding Her aging husband suffered for Zimbabwe for years, dating back to the War of Liberation Struggle.
Have you ever had me standing in for the president when he is away on business? I have no ambitions to take power from him. Should he get sick, the constitution says one of the two vice presidents here will stand in.
The first lady also took a swipe at opposition parties in the country, in particular the MDC, Tsvangirai, and former ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo, now of the People First Project. The first lady charged that Tsvangirai's MDC is a creation of the West and would never be allowed to take over power in the country.
We got sanctions because of Morgan Tsvangirai, who advised the West they should enforce the sanctions until he takes over power. But we're going to do everything to block him from taking over that power.
Mrs. Mugabe also described Gumbo as a traitor who's moving around with cash and allegedly bribing people to join the People First outfit. Mrs. Mugabe was never far away from controversy, castigated women who wear miniskirts, saying they should accept blame if they were sexually abused.
That was Chris Gandhi of VOA Zimbabwe program reporting. Belgium remains on the highest terror alert as another work week starts today, Monday, with officials describing the threat as serious and imminent. One suspect in the November 13 Paris attacks was last seen crossing into Belgium, prompting the government to close much of the capital, Brussels, over the weekend. Officials announced Sunday that schools and universities in the city, as well as the subway, will remain shut down today, Monday, because of the possibility of a Paris-like attack. Zlatika Hoek has more.
Belgian ministers in Brussels Sunday evening decided to extend tough security measures put in place over the weekend. Prime Minister Charles Michel said there is reason to fear upcoming terrorist attacks, even perhaps at several locations.
The body that assesses the threat has confirmed during the course of the evening a level 4 threat on a scale of 1 to 4 in the Brussels region. This is therefore the highest threat level. So, as it was yesterday, the threat is considered to be serious and imminent.
Belgian security forces were combing Brussels for several suspects, in addition to Belgian-born Salah Abdeslam, who is believed to have crossed the border after taking part in the Paris terror attacks. His brother Mohamed told the Belgian public broadcaster that the family hopes Salah will give himself up.
We prefer to see Salah in prison than in a cemetery.
But police warned that even if Salah Abdeslam is detained, the danger will not be over. Belgium has been at the heart of investigations into the Paris attacks because of the attackers' links to Brussels, especially its port district of Molenbeek, which has emerged as a possible home to terrorist cells.
We are now comforted by the military and police presence on all of Belgian territory. In addition, we are maintaining the recommendations in regard to minimizing the quantity of big events attended by large numbers of people. And finally, we are continuing to pay close attention to the public transport system.
Authorities say they have information suggesting that the potential targets for multiple attacks are commercial centers and other public places that are crowded during working hours.
During the weekend, it's serious, but it's even more serious on Monday and Tuesday because a lot of people work here, and that is a question for our council to decide on now.
Belgian officials say the security measures are intended to keep people safe without causing unnecessary economic loss. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
Time now for Daybreak Africa. I suppose here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African sports news, we begin with football. Tamsanko Agabuza scored in the first half before captain and centre-back Amara Jamal equalized 3 minutes to the final whistle as Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel came from behind to hold South Africa's Orlando Pirates to a 1-1 draw in the opening leg of the Orange Africa Confederations Cup final in Soweto on Saturday. In Ethiopia, a goal scored in each half by Jacob Kelly and Michael Olunga lifted defending champions Kenya to a 2-0 triumph over Uganda at the Council of East and Central Africa Football Association's CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Addis Ababa on Sunday. Earlier on, Tanzania mainland dismissed Somalia 4-0. On Saturday, Rwanda pipped Ethiopia 1-0, while Burundi edged Zanzibar by a solitary goal. Today, Monday, action shifts to the city of Bahir Dar, some 320 kilometers north of Addis Ababa, where South Sudan play Djibouti before Sudan engage guest side Malawi. Turning to athletics, Kenyan Eliud Cheptai won the men's race at the MTN Kampala International Marathon on Sunday. Kenya's Joseph Biwott was second ahead of third-placed Ugandan Peter Kibet. Meanwhile, Rael Kimaiyo led Joanne Cherop and Rosia Kiboino in a 1-2-3 Kenyan sweep of the medal podium in the women's race. In the half marathon, Kenyan Charles Kwemoi won the men's race as Uganda's Emily Chebet prevailed in the women's contest. Ugandans Alex Cherop and Stella Chesang prevailed in the men's and women's 10 kilometers, respectively. In Ethiopia, local policeman Tamirat Tola clocked 28 minutes and 44 seconds to prevail at the Great Ethiopia Run, Africa's biggest 10-kilometer race in Addis Ababa on Sunday. Bonsa Diba was runner-up ahead of another policeman, Adugna Takele. Experienced policewoman Mamitu Daska triumphed in the women's race in convincing style in a time of 32 minutes and 16 seconds. Yebegruel Melese, then Sula Utura, followed Daska across the finish line. The race attracted 40,000 participants. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Monday morning comes from Ambrose Agio of Makurdi in Benue State, Nigeria. He says, dear VOA, if President Paul Kagame had at some point in time given his word that he will quit the stage for another generation, as he is being reminded by the United States government, then I think the Rwandan leader can have a flashback and make a U-turn by rescinding his latest move to seek another term at the end of his current mandate in 2017 so that democracy can stand the test of time in his country. We thank you, Ambrose Agio of Makurdi in Benue State, Nigeria, for your comment. Please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us here in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Egyptians went to the polls on Sunday in the second stage of parliamentary elections, a vote that will produce the country's first legislature in more than 3 years. Tens of thousands of policemen were deployed in Cairo and the 12 other provinces where voting is taking place. And at least 8 Al-Shabaab militants were killed in suspected drone strike on a base near Baladul Amin village, 120 kilometers northwest of Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. That is it for this Monday, November 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very productive week.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Next. on Straight Talk Africa. Pope Francis travels to Africa, making his first trip to the continent. The pontiff will visit Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic in a pilgrimage that will bring him face to face with Islamic extremism and Christian-Muslim violence. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss the significance of the Pope's mission next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.